Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday morning to you. Jaguars Today on the air here live at Everbank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Like I mentioned, Fat Tony's got the day off. John Osier's going to come in. We'll talk a little draft as we go along. Could I know Jeff was getting into the early details of Todd McShay's first two-round mock draft out there. And today, we're going to focus on the people that don't know what they're talking about, which is perfect for me, I think, because I recognize that it takes one to know one, I think is usually the expression that comes to mind with that. But Tyler was telling me, was this on PTI yesterday, Tyler, with Tony Kornheiser?
Pardon the interruption.
Right. The Jags are still a low-hanging fruit, easy target to a lot of people in the national media who, quite frankly, don't know what the hell's going on. Tony Kornheiser isn't the kind of guy whose job, it makes him know really what's going on. He's a big picture opinion guy, and he reacts to the news of the day. And, you know, he's not the kind of guy breaking down the rosters of all 32 teams in the National Football League. Let's put it that way. But he certainly doesn't have a clue about where things stand here in Jacksonville. And Tyler, what's the setup of this? This was a discussion about the NFL playing a game or a series of games in China, right, over the next few years. Is that the case?
Correct. It's Tony Kornheiser introducing the news about the NFL and Roger Goodell saying the league will play games or is looking to play games in China. And this is Tony Kornheiser's flaming hot take.
Roger Goodell said today that the NFL plans to play a regular season game in China in the next couple of seasons. Goodell said, quote, "We actually have multiple teams that are interested in playing. We have more than we can handle at this point in time," unquote. What this story says to me is that Jacksonville will be going to China so they can once again, as they go to London all the time, they can find a stadium where they don't have to put tarps over half the seats and sell it out. If the NFL wanted to play in New Zealand, Jacksonville would go to New Zealand.
All right, that was what Tony Kornheiser claimed yesterday, which we know is really, honestly, a pile of ignorant garbage at this point in time. So much so, here's what the owner, not responding to Tony Kornheiser, of course, but the owner of the Jaguars, Shad Khan, said when asked about the prospect of playing in China during the NFL owners' meetings. Here's what he said.
Well, I think for us, I think we've got a commitment in London. I think I'm delighted. I think it's really the right thing to do. And I find this, really kind of refreshing that, 3 years ago when we were talking about London, it seemed like kind of a crazy idea. And now, playing obviously in Mexico, China, Brazil, all of those are, very real possibilities. I think it's great for the league.
Right, and as we mentioned also then a table tennis game broke out at the end of that soundbite. But all those things, all those venues that he's talking about, that's not talking about the Jags playing there. It's talking about the league playing there, and he's talking about how exciting it is, almost as if he's saying they're following our lead. Look, they see how successful it was for us in London. Now everybody else wants a piece of the pie as well, the revenue pie, that is. Look. Again, Tony Kornheiser could care less about what people in Jacksonville think, and that's why he says things like that. Jacksonville is one of the smallest markets in the National Football League without the heritage of some of the other small market teams that are out there. And so you can lob verbal bombs at them, and yes, Jaguar Twitter is going to get all up in arms, and that's fine, but in reality, is it going to hurt his ratings? I mean, I think there are probably people around the country who still use the Jags, and I'm not talking media here, I'm just talking fans of the NFL, as kind of the verbal punching bag, but you would hope that some of the national media would have a little bit of a better clue. Tony Kornheiser, I think, is loose infotainment. He's more of a straight entertainer to me than anything else, and therefore it's not like he's a trying to pass himself off as this hard-bitten reporter that has all the facts and really knows the National Football League. He clearly doesn't, if that's the way he really feels about Jacksonville, with half the seats being tarped.
But never go back to the tarp debate when you're going to...
Oh, it's lazy.
So old. And it's 2008,
right,
2009,
it's lazy,
10, whatever.
And it's uninformed, and it's so many things that we know. But it's still annoying, I would think, for Jaguar fans to have to deal with this kind of crap year after year after year. And, maybe it will change one day when and if the Jaguars win a Super Bowl. But even then, I have a feeling they're going to say, yeah, that's a team. They win a Super Bowl. They still can't get people in the stands. That's what they'll be saying about it. So today, we ask you, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day is simply this: which member of the national media is the most clueless when it comes to your Jacksonville Jaguars? Tony Kornheiser certainly will garner some votes in this. We've had a variety of people being voted for and had their names bandied about so far. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Tyler. And, of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is up and running, 641-1010, if you want to weigh in on any aspect of Jaguar football today or the National Football League at large. That's your phone number. It's also the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford, 641-1010. You can share your thoughts that way. John Osier is going to join us coming up in just moments. We'll recap the owners' meetings and look ahead. Draft 5 weeks from today, ladies and gentlemen. The Jaguars will be employing the fifth pick either via trade or more likely just selecting the best defensive player that's available in their eyes on their list. 5 weeks away, starting to get real, starting to get a little bit closer now. We'll speak with the senior writer from Jaguars.com coming back on the other side. Mike Dempsey in with you live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, glad you're along with us on this Thursday live at EverBank. Today's question of the day, which you can answer in a variety of venues, is simply: which member of the national media is the most clueless about your Jacksonville Jaguars? We should state that we're not going with the hacker definition of national media. Hacker's definition of national media is anyone who works outside of the city of Jacksonville.
Well, in hacker's definition, he's media.
Hacker, this is true. And I would say loosely correct.
No, I love Hacker.
But Hacker will have a guy. Hacker had somebody on. They had somebody on XL Primetime.
Clarence Hill from Dallas.
And Clarence Hill, that's who it was. Clarence Hill from Dallas. He covers Cowboys. And Hacker said it was always interesting to get an opinion from the national media. And, well, great. Let me know when you're going to have one of those guys on. He's a local Dallas reporter. Yeah. He's not a national media guy. So for people who are saying, have suggested Tanya Ganguly, who, by the way, knows the Jaguars people work outside the market very well, she would be a member of the local Houston media, right?
Absolutely, right.
She covers them for the AP.
She's national in the sense that she's not local, but that doesn't necessarily define national media. So, yeah, I mean,
Joe Fortunato voted for Sal Palantonio, by the way. I don't know if he did that in confidence or not, but it's out there for all to hear now. Sal Pal,
yeah, I wouldn't say Sal's clueless.
No?
But I, you know.
This goes back, Joe tells me, because he made comments that did not reflect favorably on the city during the Super Bowl visit, which a lot of the national media were inconvenienced, John.
Yeah, I mean, as a member of the media, we do not take inconvenience lightly.
It's true, though. In all seriousness, when the Super Bowl was in New York a couple of years ago, okay, what they did, and I've told this story a couple of times, a couple dozen on the radio, but they were so fearful of the snowstorm hitting the Super Bowl and the media writing what a travesty this is, that in the overflow media scene, the media don't just sit in the press box, they sit in the stands.
Right.
Take a couple of sections of the stands. Well, they had an overhang. First of all, they put you under an overhang. There are very few of those available, so you don't get snowed on.
Correct.
And then they strung space heaters above your heads, which
can
actually
you imagine if that had happened here?
It turned it into a broiler. They would have said, oh, look at this.
We probably wouldn't have needed the heaters. But
right, but something of that, it would have been, look at how low rent this is. Look at how, you know, just cheap this looks. But they did it so the national media and all the media that came to cover the Super Bowl wouldn't be cold. And everyone else could be freezing their butt off, but they're going to sit there and say, oh, it's toasty warm here. Actually, it was broiling under them. Right. But it's little things like that because they understand that it doesn't matter how great the experience is, it's going to be judged through the eyes of history by what the writers and pundits say about it.
Sure. I heard from non-writers and pundits, from football people, that about the same issues with Jackson. Well, that's fine. I mean, that's fine. Nobody likes to be inconvenienced and whatever. It's
exactly.
A good city. I like
it. It's a phenomenal city, you know. But if you have to take an extra 30 minutes getting from point A to point B, and you're used to having everything spoon-fed to you.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I haven't been that guy.
Is that right?
I mean, yeah, it's about every Super Bowl.
And every other city, they're saying John Osher.
I'll let you know a little
question,
secret,
by the way.
I'll find something to complain about every now and then, Mike.
Oh, so will I. So will I. But it's not the city of Jacksonville, usually.
No.
Although traffic, look, I'll complain about traffic. I don't complain about the traffic. I understand there's traffic. It's not nearly as bad as it is in some places. Leave early if you don't like it. I complain about individual drivers and their lack of appreciable skills on how to use the road.
I didn't cover the Super Bowl here. I was in Indianapolis when it happened. A Super Bowl city is always judged by the media, at least in my experience, on how convenient it is to get around and the downtown. And from a Super Bowl media coverage perspective, this was probably not ideal. Now, is it fair for them to judge the entire city and the people who live here and the experience of living here based on that? No, because most people who live here love it because there's so many things that appeal to us. But a national media go. I don't particularly, I'll put it this way, I don't particularly love Indianapolis. I didn't particularly love living there for 10 years. But to go and cover an event there.
Best place you can go.
It is a terrific downtown, but that doesn't mean I want to move back there.
I understand.
And I never say never, but that's the last place I want to move back to.
And Tony Kornheiser's opinion, whatever he says running off the mouth, ill-informed as it is, has no bearing on any Jaguar fans' enjoyment of the city or the team or the games they go to, and they understand that most of what he's saying is false. It is an annoyance, though. And
it is. It gets tiresome
because
it's the same old narrative. It's the same old dialogue. Anybody who reads The Ozone, and he knows who he is, since day one, I've been saying you can't worry about it. You got to let it roll off your backs. But I also get it's easy for me to say that because I'm a media guy and I know most of these guys. And I know that a lot of the shtick from the national media is, it's an easy target. You can make fun of Jacksonville and very few people are going to get on you except from Jacksonville because
and compared
to whatever
that doesn't mean they're not
target.
There are a lot of passionate fans here, but when you talk about the overall population and the population of NFL fans, it's extremely
and
small.
And other people in the media aren't going to go, "Whoa, you can't make fun of Jacksonville." So it's an easy target.
Well, I was
that's
talking
fine,
with talking
but
with
the
Jeff
good things
Prosser.
That are going on here outweigh it.
I was talking with Jeff just half an hour ago. And we're blasting Cleveland, right? Cleveland.
Who
the hell knows what Cleveland's going to do? They'll screw anything up.
Right, and there's
it's
probably
the
a guy
thing.
From Cleveland ready to drop gloves.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
But, have fun with it. Be annoyed with it as this part of the dialogue of our sports fans' lives. But don't let it just get you down.
People like to be out ahead of the curve, right? Pete Prisco picked the Jags already in a column to be one of the surprise teams Super Bowl for 2016, right? Did you, coming back from the owners' meetings, I don't know how much you are interacting with other members of the media, but not only that, all the different events that we've had in this NFL offseason, as you're exposed to different opinions from around the league, are you getting the sense that they're really seen as a team on the come?
I am, and I think a little bit of the picking them that high is, again, to be ahead of the curve. But it was interesting to me. We had John Clayton on Jaguars.com Live, and John is as measured and as analytical and as not prone to hyperbole as you can get in the national media, but at the same time, very, very knowledgeable. And we talked on the air, and I talked to him for a long time off the air. He believes they have a real legitimate shot for the first time since this regime got here to push above 500, get to 9-7. Now, a fan say, 9-7, that's it. But I use that as perspective of he would normally be the guy saying, there's a long way to go. And it was interesting I listened to John because he's a guy who really studies the salary cap and studies trends and he firmly believes that the building of the offense the way they did it and then coming along afterward and building the defense, that's the way you are going to see teams moving forward build the franchises who are down and trying to get back up, which this team certainly was.
What, build the offense first?
Well, not necessarily, but one side of the ball, then the other, because of the way the cap is structured. Now, I'm not going to go into the heavy, heavy details, but he said since 2011, since this new CBA, it is harder to build quickly than it was before. And he said the Jaguars build pace from where they were is, to him, is not alarming. He says this is about, if you're going to build it right, meaning through the draft and solid where you're getting players and you're not absolutely gambling in free agency, this was the pace that had to take place. Now, is he right? I don't know. But you get more of that vibe that the plan and everything is coming together. And when you look at the overall roster, the talent level, people nationally generally have an idea that it is much further along and much more solid than it was 2 or 3 years ago, which is obvious to us. But they also say that judged against the rest of the league for the first time in a long time, it is very, very close to being there.
Well, we hope so.
Or there, right? Whatever that word is. You know.
Because there are skeptical fans out there, I think, who are very,
as there should be,
very understandable if they say, that's great. I've seen 12 wins in the last 3 years. They've averaged 4 wins. And, yeah, okay, they went from 3 to 5. Big whoop.
Right.
How many games did they blow? So there's different ways you can look at that.
It's interesting, though, to me, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mike, but it's almost reversed where – 2 or 3 years ago, when there was the energy and the off-season hype, which we're all sort of guilty of, it was the fans here who were, yes, 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 this is awesome. And it was the national media that was like, eh. Well, now it's almost reversed, where a lot of the fan base, I get it, I read the emails every day, a lot of the fan base hopes but doesn't really believe.
Right.
Whereas the vibe you're talking to from national media is, hey, this looks pretty good. This is an offense that you've got to think, as young as it is, it ain't going down. You know, there's only, you know, as good as it was, you know, it's hard not to think there aren't steps to be taken, because as good as the offense was, it wasn't close to perfect. And they're young guys. They made rookie mistakes or second-year mistakes. And historically in the NFL, those things, as inexperienced guys play together, it's usually a learning curve up. So there's not a perception that they're going down at all. So it's just interesting to me at the owners' meetings how different the vibe was about this team from people who look at it maybe from above or from afar from an objective point of view than we here in the fan base who understandably was very angry at some of the things that happened last season and very distrusting of what's going on.
Now, when you talk about the offense just getting better, I agree with you, although we keep saying you got to temper your expectations, I think, for the passing game numbers, not for the overall offense, because there should be some growth in the running game,
right,
which could take away.
Well, that's
from
what
the
I'm talking
game.
About. I don't think there's any way in the world the passing numbers go up.
Right.
I don't want them to go up.
You're talking
down.
About the overall effectiveness of the offense.
I'm talking about being good, because the offense last year was statistically very good, but productivity and big moments wise, it was not always very good. And we forget when we see the big numbers late in the season. There were a lot of stretches where they were bad because the running game wasn't effective and they were not efficient on third down. And I'm drawing a blank on the exact details, but as much as we got on the defense, there were times late in the season where the offense had long stretches. And I'm wanting to say New Orleans, I'm wanting to say Atlanta in the first half, where they let games get away from. Now the defense was bad, don't get me wrong, but the offense had long stretches where they must become more efficient and must run the ball better. And that's where you figure they're probably not going to get worse. If they get better there, then all of a sudden you get some efficiency in this offense. And this offense was not efficient last year. It was very explosive and productive at times.
All right, John Osher is going to stick around for another 20 minutes or so from Jaguars.com. We'll get further into what he gleaned from the owners' meetings and where things stand now, 5 weeks away from day one of the 2016 NFL Draft. Question of the day, you can weigh in on Twitter, Facebook, or any number of ways, is which member of the national media is the most clueless when it comes to your Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey with John Osher. We're live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along Jaguars Today live at EverBank, 641-1010 if you want to get in either on the phones or on the 1010XL text line, driven by Duval Ford. John Osher, the senior writer for Jaguars.com, our guest in studio. Johnny O, back from the owners' meetings. We were just discussing on the break here a moment ago if there were any implications for the Jaguars, more so particular implications for them as opposed to implications league-wide for some of the rules changes and things like that. You said one thing that you came away with the impression at the owners' meetings or after the owners' meetings was that the Jaguar London model of having a, let's call it a sister city, right, overseas?
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a sister city for a 35-year period, but for right now, London has taken on the role of the secondary market, if you will, or whatever you want to call it. There's definitely a connection there. Well, and it's clear Shad Khan wants it. And if you remember 3 years ago, it was sort of lampooned. And even within the league, there were eyebrows raised of, well, international play, yeah, the Jaguar, poo-pooed, if you will, or not understood or not cared about. Well, it's clear the vibe now within the league is they're not pulling back internationally. They're now talking Mexico City, China, et cetera, et cetera.
Brazil.
And there's no inclination of this going away. And now you've got Bob McNair talking to Shad Khan about wanting to set up that. And Bob McNair talking about wanting an international fan base and to expand. And it's clear that Shad Khan was ahead of the curve on this. And I'm not a visionary, Mike. I don't know if you knew that about me. I'm not that bright. But when you look around the league and you see teams wanting to have a foothold in international markets and seeing that there are revenue streams there and that there's potential growth there, this whole idea of having a market somewhere else other than your home base to supplement what you are doing locally, I don't think the Jaguars are going to be an outlier on that. And it wouldn't surprise me over the next three decades, by the time I retire from this, if you look around and you have a multiple teams doing something like this. I don't know if the pattern is going to be, hey, we're going to play one home game a year in this overseas market, and it's always going to be. But that's not that ridiculous to think about when you think about it.
For some teams, I don't think you'd ever see it league-wide, but I think you could
teams. There are 10 or 11, 12 teams that are there's old-school teams, Pittsburgh, Chicago, where, yeah, I get that they are going to sell out good seasons, bad seasons, whatever. But there's a lot of other teams that aren't like that, where it rises and falls on how they play during the year. And there's not a feeling within the league that there is all of a sudden going to be multiple tens of thousands more demand for season tickets in markets, meaning the in-game experience initiative and the challenge of getting people in seats that HDTV and home entertainment has brought is probably not going to be turned around to the point where you have 100,000-seat stadiums, if you follow. So where are other fans to find elsewhere? And stadiums are actually wanting to be smaller for the most part. Well, if that's the case, then you look around and try to find other avenues to have footprints elsewhere. I'm not explaining that well, but you get my point. They don't want to just be Texas's team, as Houston or Dallas. Maybe Dallas wants to also be New Mexico's team. And Dallas is probably a bad example because they're probably one of the teams that wouldn't do that. But a team like Oakland or a team like...
By the way, Dallas already claims they're San Antonio's team, too, as they try to preemptively block anyone from going.
Yeah. But Atlanta, Miami, Tampa Bay, cities like that that don't historically have long, long waiting lists, over 15, 20 years, could there be something where you see a lot of teams have these relationships? I think that makes a lot of sense.
All right, we'll get back to some...
It certainly makes sense for this franchise right now.
Well, right, with this situation, I think most people understand that it does. There are probably always going to be a few holdouts, but, at the end of this run, will it be 8 years for the Jags in London, right?
So, yeah. And it is interesting that with the Jags in London now, it is a situation where they feel very good that they were first in London. And it is a priority to hold on to that foothold.
Yeah, I think if you let Shad Khan sign up right now for another 10 years on top of this, he would do it.
I don't think there's any question about
that. Right. So, they're going to do it as long as it's viable and allowable. Right now, you're in a position. You think back to when the Rams were going to play a series of games there, and then they backed out, and the Jags quickly filled the vacuum. Well, now you hear stories coming out. I don't know if you saw the story that the Rams were incentivized to draft Michael Sam. Howard Balzer's kind of reporting this, and one of the things was there was a lot of quid pro quo going back and forth that if the Rams were allowed to do this, if they did this, they'd be given this concession.
Right.
And also at the same time, all right, you want the vote to go smoothly to move to Los Angeles, you're going to have to agree to go on Hard Knocks and not fight it, even though playing in a temporary venue, they had no ability to block that anyway. You're going to have to agree to be the home team in China, which you're going to do for the first game in China, and things like that. So it's still a lot of arm twisting going on to get a lot of teams to give up a home game in some of these venues.
Yeah, but I think that's going to, as teams, I think that's changing. I think that's going to change over time.
I think it probably will as well. But if you are the, if you look, they're going to play in Los Angeles, so they're going to be the LA Rams. It's a little less. But if you're in the Midwest.
And they're going to have such a revenue producing facility by the time it's over with. We had Sam, Sam Farmer on .com Live, and he was making the point. Once they get into that facility,
they're not going anywhere.
They've got to spend some time making that work and making that the thing that it's supposed to be.
Right, but in the meantime, you're not going to have that. You give one up. You still don't probably want to go. As somebody pointed out on Twitter to me the other day, San Francisco to China is only 2 hours more than Jacksonville to London is. So it's doable. Well, it's doable if you're a West Coast team.
Sure.
What about the opponent that you're playing? What about, you know, so again, on a one-off kind of basis, and I say on an annual one-off basis, it is doable to make these kind of trips work. We've seen it happen in London. The logistics of doing it more widespread, I think, are still pretty daunting.
The more you're around Shad Khan and see sort of the art of his ownership here, the more you realize, what did he have when he came over to the States? What's the story? Like $2 or
$300, something like that.
You don't go from $300 to $4 billion by being dumb,
unless you're incredibly lucky. All right,
then he's the luckiest guy.
He hit Powerball several times, I believe. Let's go to Nick in Pittsburgh, Jag fan up in Pittsburgh, who's checking in at 641-1010. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Hi. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, you're talking about Tony Kornheiser and stuff. I mean, he rips on everyone and Wilbon. I don't like them both. You know, I think the Jaguars have something down there. I mean, I think the pieces are coming along. I see the Jaguars in like the next 5 years or so probably making a Super Bowl run. This year coming up, I see their record as 8-8. And thanks for letting me on there.
All right, thank you, Nick. Jaguars still in a common pronunciation of the squad outside of the city of Jacksonville.
As long as they're saying it,
I guess.
I'm cool with it.
Nick's a Jag fan in Pittsburgh, and I get his point. I mean, look, like I said at the top, Tony Kornheiser is more not even infotainment; he's just almost straight entertainment.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's if you watch. Watch these guys with a grain of salt, realizing that most of the time, anybody you see nationally who's not really tied into the NFL, and I'm talking an NFL writer who does it all the time and who is really active, they're skimming the surface on 90% of the stuff they talk about, and they're talking about things that aren't – they're not going to know that there's renovations going on in Everbank Field. There's not – they're not going to know that the tarps have been coming off slowly. They're not going to know about the energy. There's just no way. So just chalk it up to being entertainment and I guess let it bother you, but don't let it make you lose sleep.
I can get that. There is a degree where – and Kornheiser, again, is a blowhard and he's not – he's probably trying to stir the pot as much. If these were comments coming from a quote-unquote NFL writer, you know, it'd be a little bit different.
Yep.
But it does – you see that. And the guy in Montana, the guy in Arkansas, that colors his perception of the franchise. It's still
no question.
And in the end, what difference does it make? Because this is not college football where it's a popularity contest as to who gets to go to the playoffs. This is where the standings dictate everything for you. So it doesn't really matter in the end what they say about you, but it's still an annoyance, I think, if you're a Jag.
It's an annoyance, and the thing that'll change it, a get hot, make the playoffs a few times, then all of a sudden ESPN's coming down here and on game day and on the CBS pregame show, You're going to see stories with people in the fans. You're going to see Duval Doom on there being interviewed, which is a frightening thing, but
wow.
It'd be cool.
That's the first one you went to, huh?
That's what you're going to see, and then over time, it's going to be a cool story. They're going to be hot. They're going to be the little engine that could. So it'll just take winning and get people down there telling that story that we already sort of know is happening, but it doesn't happen nationally until there's winning to go along with it.
All right, one more thought coming out of the owners' meetings in terms of rules changes. The two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties mm-hmm. in a single game, which will result now in an ejection. What was the tenor of the reaction to that you gathered?
There's a feeling that it's not a organic rule. And by that I mean it's not something that league and football people looked at and said, boy, we need this. This is a real problem that we've got too many guys taking unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. And we have to legislate this out of the game. It's more of a perception thing coming from the top from the commissioner's office, if you will, that we need this to show that it's not rampant. If that makes sense. So I think the nervousness is you're not going to see it a lot, but you're not going to see a lot of situations where guys get two because it didn't happen much last year. But when it does, it's going to be really controversial. And you're also going to have a situation where if a guy gets one unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in the first quarter, then all of a sudden there's pushing after the whistle, there's this, that, trying to bait that guy into doing it. So then all of a sudden you get a lot of cheap, chintzy action going on. And is that really what you're trying to get into? Are you trying to get in a situation where guys are on one team are trying to get guys thrown out? That's not that appealing, but it's there, so it's a
right.
Factor.
And there's no doubt that'll happen.
I hope that's not what it becomes.
That happens to a lesser degree now, but not so much that they're trying to get guys thrown out as they're trying to get guys to get a penalty,
right?
And react. They say things and try to get you to react, and then they put their hands up like, what? And did you see what he did to me? They're looking for 15 yards.
Right.
They're not looking for an ejection.
Say they're in. The high-profile things are a bad example because, like, the Beckham thing wouldn't have gotten him thrown out last year. But if a player like that, a superstar player, gets one early, then all of a sudden you've got a series of guys on the other team kind of coming up and poking him in the ribs and, saying, hey, I don't like your dog. So who knows, but that's the nervousness. Usually those nervousness things don't come to fruition, but that was sort of the talk about it.
All right. By the way, Duval Doom tells you once the NFL goes to 18 games and two byes, international games will be the norm. Hush your mouth. I don't need these two byes messing up my fantasy football season. All right.
Yeah, Duval Doom will be on ESPN in a couple
way
of years.
Too complicated. He probably will be.
Hey, I knew him when.
That's right. All right, Johnny O. What do you have coming up on Jaguars.com?
Come on, Jaguars.com. We'll be tomorrow. I'll do the weekend focus, kind of looking back at the owners' meetings a little bit. And I'm going to the Miami Open tomorrow. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What is the Miami Open?
It's their ATP tennis tournament. So
okay.
I'm taking the wife down to see Roger.
I did not know what sport you were referring to, Open.
So that's where Johnny O will be tomorrow.
All right. Well, good. Enjoy.
I plan to enjoy it very
much. All
right,
buddy. Thank you, bud.
All right, guys.
We'll see you. John Osier from Jaguars.com. Check him out on Twitter, simply at John Osier. Coming back with this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, time for this date in football history. Looking back at March 24th, go back to 1973, and San Francisco 49er president Lou Spadia made a proposal back then. His proposal was the NFL should expand all the way up to 30 teams. It took the NFL, as we know, 20 more years to hit the 30-team mark. How do we know that? That's when the Jacksonville Jaguars were granted a franchise, becoming the 30th such franchise in the National Football League. Also, famous birthdays for this date. Born in 1959, Ronaldo Skeets Nehemiah. You remember him as an Olympic-caliber hurdler. Of course, then went on to play in his early 20s with the San Francisco 49ers. Didn't really catch on, no pun intended. Played receiver for 3 years. Scored a handful of touchdowns. Had great speed. Wasn't a football player. 57 years old today for Skeets. Born on this date in 1970. The idiot kicker, Mike Vanderjack. Remember when Peyton Manning had this to say about Vanderjack?
Here we are. I'm out of my third Pro Bowl. We're talking about our idiot kicker who got liquored up and ran his mouth off. So what has the sports world come to? We're talking about idiot kickers. He has ruined kickers for life. Akers and Vinatieri, these guys are great guys. They've been getting killed all week because our idiot ran his mouth. So when I get home, I'll deal with it. Tony and I talk about it. It's kind of funny, really, when you think about it. If he is still a teammate, we'll deal with it. You know, that remains to be seen. But the sad thing is, Lynn, he's a good kicker. He's a good kicker.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I assume that was Peyton Manning talking to Lynn Swann there, Tyler, that Vanderjagt had questioned Peyton Manning's leadership skills or something along those lines, right?
He said
right?
Peyton needed to show more emotion.
Was that what it was?
Right, and he also ripped into Tony Dungy as well, but it was like a Canadian TV interview or something like that, right?
Right, and he may have actually been liquored up. So Vanderjagt was born on this date. Coincidentally enough, Peyton Manning was born on this exact date as well. That's very weird to me
for some
reason. Born 6 years later, Peyton turns 40 years old today. Vanderjagt is obviously 46. At one point, Vanderjagt was statistically the most accurate kicker in NFL history. That's fallen by the wayside. Also born on this date in 1981. Happy 35th to the human, what would he be? Wouldn't be a tackling dummy. He'd be the human blocking sled. Mike Doss, as best known for Fred Taylor, absolutely trucking him in a Jags-Colts game that long ago. And this one, not football-related, Tyler. Do you know who? This is a quiz to test your awareness of sports and everything. Do you know who Chuck Wepner is?
Chuck Wepner.
Help if I told you he was nicknamed the Bayonne Bleeder? It probably would not.
No, I have zero. I don't even have a guess.
Chuck Wepner was a tomato can, is what they call those fighters, right? That basically go in, get beat up a little bit. Maybe they can go to distance for you. He was a heavyweight fighter back in the 70s and, you know, just a mediocre record. And reeled off, I think, 8 wins in a row at one point and got himself on the radar and got a matchup with Muhammad Ali, the heavyweight champ. And actually knocked Ali down in the fight. It was only the third guy to knock Ali down in the fight. Ended up almost going the distance. He got counted out with 19 seconds left. He was on a count of 6, and the ref waved it off in the 15th round. So basically went the distance with Ali. A young aspiring filmmaker named Sylvester Stallone watched the fight, went home, and wrote Rocky. That is what Chuck Wepner's claim to fame is. He is Rocky.
I think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, he is what Rocky is based on, and that fight in 1975 took place on this date as Muhammad Ali retained the world heavyweight title with a 15th round knockout of Chuck Wepner. And that is this date in football and other stuff history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The NFL announced the Los Angeles Rams will be the featured team on HBO's Hard Knocks, and according to the HBO press release, the show will showcase, quote, an intriguing mix of Pro Bowl veterans, emerging stars, free agents, and rookie hopefuls. So that'll be very exciting. The bigger story coming out last night with the Rams at Hard Knocks was Howard Balzer of 590 The Fan in St. Louis. He reports that sources say the NFL agreed not to ask the Rams to appear at Hard Knocks in 2014 if they drafted Michael Sam. Balzer writes, quote, it is believed the NFL did not want to face questions about the eventuality that Sam could go undrafted, and the Rams were viewed as an ideal spot because of St. Louis's proximity to the Missouri campus in Columbia. Only 7 players were drafted after Sam was taken by the Rams late in round 7. FSU kicker Alberto Aguayo is one of the hot commodities and probably going to go in the top couple rounds, and that is exactly what Daniel Jeremiah thinks of NFL.com.
Is the premium on the kicker guys going up now that we lock in this longer extra point?
I think absolutely. And I go back to what we had. Nate Kading, who ended up going in the 3rd round, and then Bengals ended up taking a kicker out of Ohio State there in the 2nd round. I think we could see a kicker kind of challenge right on the edge there, 2nd round, 3rd round. I don't think Roberto Aguayo gets out of the 3rd round, guys.
As long as the Jaguars don't take a kicker in round 3.
Mm.
Ooh, Aaron Rodgers went on a comedian podcast, Pete Holmes' podcast, entitled You Made It Weird. And Rodgers and Holmes talked for over 2 hours, and one of the most interesting things to come out was Rodgers recollecting on a UFO sighting he had with ESPN's Steve Levy, and here's what the main chunk of the discussion talked about.
It was a large orange left-to-right moving object.
Whoa.
And
it wasn't triangular, it was more like a messy shape.
You know, because of the overcast nature of the night and the snow, you couldn't make out It was behind kind of the clouds we were seeing, but it was definitively large in the night sky, moving from the left to right. Again, we're at like 12:30 at night here.
Yeah.
It was me and Steve and his brother, that saw it. And it goes out of sight, and we look at each other and go, what in the f*** was that?
The entire two-hour podcast with Rodgers and the comedian Pete Holmes is available on Nerdist.com. And finally here, Mike, NFL draft analyst Lance Zierlein shared some of what he's been hearing around the league, and he has a quote from an anonymous NFC executive on the Eagles making a move up to number two, trading with Cleveland to go up there and get Carson Wentz. Don't be surprised if a team like the Eagles makes a really strong move to go up to the board to get Wentz. I don't think he's worth it, but I think they do. Everyone thinks they have to move ahead of Cleveland, but Browns chief strategy officer Paul DePodesta will want to get as many picks as possible out of this draft. It wouldn't surprise me if any team moved directly to Cleveland's spot to get Wentz. Those are the words of an anonymous NFC executive.
A few things, some interesting stories here. One, I'm still not buying that Philadelphia would pay Sam Bradford all that money, pay Chase Daniel all that backup money. $21 million over 3 years is high-end backup money in the NFL. And then go out and spend all this draft capital that's going to take to trade up from 8 to 2 and get that to happen. And then you got a question. Of course, you may look at it as a positive. If Cleveland opts to pass on Carson Wentz, that may be the best endorsement you could possibly have for Carson Wentz. They haven't exactly made a habit of making wise decisions, although a new regime basically coming in this offseason. So I'm skeptical that Philadelphia is going to be the team that makes the move up there. Some of these other stories pretty interesting as well. Why does the guy chuckle? Why does he laugh when Aaron Rodgers is telling the story? Aaron Rodgers is not sensationalizing this. A lot of people have seen UFOs. He's not saying little green men are coming to get us. He's saying, I saw something that is unidentified. I don't know what it is. People see these things all the time. They're, you know, I think it's a real phenomena.
Have you ever seen one?
I've not seen a UFO. I wish I had. I have seen a full-on ghost, though. I mean, a ghost. Yes.
Is it a long story?
I'll give you the story. I'll give you the one-minute capsule.
All right, let's do it.
Okay? I was house-sitting back when I was in high school. I might have been in, like, freshman in college. But either way, I was house-sitting for this family that I knew in DeLand, Florida. And it was a little bit of an older house, but I couldn't – it wasn't like it was hundreds and hundreds of years old or anything like that. Anyway – so I had a couple of buddies over, and we're just watching TV. And picture this. I'm sitting on a couch, and if I turn to my left, the TV is at that end of the room, okay?
Okay.
So if I'm looking straight forward, I'm looking through an open doorway on the opposite wall of the room. There's just an open doorway, okay? Another friend of mine is sitting where he's facing directly to the TV, so if he turns his head to the right, he sees what I see looking straight forward, right? And then a third friend is sitting on a couch across looking at me with his back to that other room. Mm-hmm. So the two of us, myself and the other guy, are talking to this guy who's on the couch, so we're kind of looking in the same direction. And I'm not kidding you here. The layout is, I could draw this for you to make a lot more sense, but someone came from the back porch and walked across the open doorway towards the staircase that went upstairs. And when I say someone, it was a woman in either a white dress or a nightgown, right? It was some kind of flowing type garment. It wasn't like a full-on like ghost head. She was a woman, but it was that stereotypical like ghostly, cloudy kind of, you know, vapor, smoky thing. But the thing was, my friend and I reacted immediately at the exact same time.
Oh, so like, you both saw it. It wasn't
we
like,
we both
oh,
saw
oh, wow.
it. And we were both like, did you just see what I just saw? And our third friend thinks we were just putting an elaborate prank on. And we truly searched the house strategically, like from bottom to top, because the only place, if this had actually been a person, they would have had to go up the stairs. They couldn't have got past us any other way. So we circled around, met at the staircase, went up the stairs, did a strategic search of all the rooms so nobody could get by us if there was an actual person. We knew there wasn't a person there. I'm telling you. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it's indicative of, other than we saw it. And I know for a fact that ghosts are real because I saw one with my own eyes.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
You don't forget something like that, I'm sure.
Never forgot it. And to this day, I think my third friend still thinks that there's a long con going on that, you know, 30 years later, we're going to really get him. Gotcha. Remember that time we made you think there was a ghost? No, there was a ghost. It was on Pennsylvania Avenue in DeLand. So there you have it. No UFOs for me. This Michael Sam story, I think, is extremely interesting if Howard Balzer has his facts right in this story, because he is suggesting not only that the league incentivized the Rams to draft Michael Sam by saying we wouldn't force you to go on Hard Knocks during the 2014 season because they didn't want to do it. A lot of teams don't want to do it. But if you spend your final pick on Michael Sam, not only will we do that because we want the PR for the league, that we are the open and inclusive league to do this, but also he speculates that the league office twisted arms to ensure that defensive end Ethan Westbrooks would not be drafted by other teams over the final seven picks. In other words, that's the guy the Rams would have taken had they not been squeezed into taking Michael Sam. And Ethan Westbrooks then did not go. The Rams gave him a $20,000 signing bonus and $30,000 in guaranteed salary for the first year of his contract, which is a little out of the norm for an undrafted free agent, or at least at the high end for an undrafted free agent. And he made the 53-man roster that year, whereas Michael Sam did not. So if this is true, think about this. This is the league tampering with the product. The product is competition. The product is we play football. I put my team out there. You put your team out there. We see who wins the game. Teams that win the most games go to the playoffs and on and on and on. And it's all, look, we make bad decisions sometimes. We make good decisions sometimes. But the league isn't making those decisions for us on who we should draft, when we should draft them, and these kind of things. If this story gets legs and turns out to be true, doesn't this hurt openly gay players more so than help them? Isn't this the worst possible thing they could have done? Look, the only way we could have gotten one of these guys drafted is by the league twisting somebody's arms. And how did that work out anyway? The guy couldn't even cut it, couldn't even make the final roster, hasn't played a second in the National Football League. To me, if this story is true, it is a terrible look for the National Football League. I don't know if we're ever going to get confirming details. I'm sure the NFL will deny that it did anything to try to compel any team to take a particular player for other teams to pass on a particular player. I don't know what you would tell the other teams. Hey, you can't draft Ethan Westbrooks here in the final so many picks. I mean, the Rams want to do it, but we're making them take Michael Sam. If I'm one of these other teams, I'm like, screw it. I want Ethan Westbrooks. Right. I'm taking him. You know, I think that could be a potentially really big story. But I have a feeling the NFL will do its best just to sweep it aside. And
It is interesting that you mentioned the $50,000 that Ethan Westbrooks got, the defensive end. That right. was more than what Michael Sam got. He got more money than Michael Sam. And also, Ethan Westbrooks is a defensive end, and when they announced the signing of him as an undrafted free agent, they announced it as a defensive tackle. That had to be on purpose, right?
You would think so, right? So as not to say, well, how come you gave this defensive end more money than the guy you just drafted to play defensive end, right?
Yeah, and he's clearly not a defensive tackle, but they announced him as such.
Balzer also talks about the possibility of the league saying, if you really want us to make this smooth for you, Stan Kroenke, to vote on the first try to go to Los Angeles, then you are going to do Hard Knocks, which, again, they could have compelled him to do that anyway. If they move to L.A. and they're playing in a temporary venue, any team in a temporary venue does not have the right to veto being on Hard Knocks, I guess, unless they've been on it, you know, in the last year or whatever. And also, we saw quickly the Rams were put forth and accepted the fact that they're going to be the home team to play in the first game, regular season NFL game in China as well. So the league, look, I don't have any doubt the league does backroom deals. You know, we've often heard that if you are going to get a Super Bowl, you need to either build a new stadium or you need to, you know, put a bunch of new money into your stadium. And that is the carrot that the NFL dangles out there for cities. Hey, give a bunch of money to this billionaire owner to improve the stadium. We'll bring the Super Bowl and its economic impact to your city. So those kind of deals happen. But those deals like that shouldn't impact competitive balance. Telling a team you should draft this guy and other teams you can't draft this guy, that absolutely does. Now we're talking about end of the draft, guys. It doesn't matter. Just a hint of that is some place the NFL shouldn't be going if this is, in fact, accurate. I'm going to keep my eyes on that one for sure. Coming back, we'll take a look. Todd McShay with a two-round mock draft out there today. Take your calls at 641-1010 as well. Question of the day is this. Which member of the national sports media, or the national media as far as that goes, but we're focused on the sports media here, is the most clueless about the Jacksonville Jaguars? Weigh in on Twitter at MD_1010XL and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, coming back here on Jaguars Today, live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey here with you. Fat Tony's got the next couple days off. He'll be back with me on Monday morning. Tyler Devitt at 1010XL World Headquarters as well. By the way, Tyler, I saw a review last night of Batman versus Superman, which I think, I guess, opens to the public tonight at midnight. Is that right?
I'm not sure. A pre-release review. Okay.
Yeah, like a reviewer's review
gotcha.
Of Batman versus Superman, and it was not kind to the movie.
Ooh, that's not good. Say. The previews look pretty decent.
They're fine, man. It's a, you know, I'm much more excited for Marvel Civil War, you know, Captain America Civil War, because I'm a Marvel guy. But my son has been eagerly anticipating The Dark Knight taking on Superman, and he is a big Batman fan in this one, so he's hoping that Ben Affleck comes out on top, who his acting in the movie was actually hailed as the high point. And some people were suggesting he may be the best Batman ever. I know that's sacrilege to Christian Bale fans out there, or Michael Keaton fans, or whatever, or Adam West fans, for goodness knows. Anyway, it was not a overwhelmingly positive review. Let's just put it that way.
Now, will that change it anyway. And make? Will you still be viewing it? Will you still make a trip?
I'll see
to
it
the
Sunday.
Theaters?
Okay, we're going. We're going to go Easter Sunday.
Okay,
nothing says Easter like a couple of superheroes duking it out on the big screen.
Quality family time.
Yeah, well, my sister is coming into town this weekend with her three girls, and her husband has been a big Batman fan before my son was ever born, so they want to see it. And, look, I'll, you know, any excuse to watch the superheroes on the big screen, I'll take it pretty much at this point in time. But not expecting the best movie to come down the line. But who knows? Reviewers have different tastes as well. So maybe we just caught a guy on a bad day. I'll have to let you know on Monday how that whole thing works out. By the way, Jeff Fisher has refuted the Howard Balzer story, the head coach of the St. Louis, now L.A. Rams, and said that story is absolutely absurd. Michael Sam himself was contacted, but he tweeted out in response to the tweet that Howard Balzer said the decision to draft him came in exchange for a commitment not to make the Rams the Hard Knocks team in 2014. Michael Sam's reaction was, "I'm not surprised at all." Quote, "I'm not surprised at all," end quote. So why would he not be surprised? That is the next stage in the process to find out what that reaction means. Are we interpreting the right way? As if to say, I would read that saying, well, you know, the league tried to make this a, you know, political situation, a PR situation over everything. Wouldn't surprise me at all if they tried to steer me to a particular team. I don't know if that's the way he meant it, but that's what he said in direct response to Howard Balzer's tweet. He just said simply, "I'm not surprised at all." So now the national media, who we believe collectively don't know anything when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars, will be out chasing Michael Sam for a follow-up quote as to what's going on with this situation. Jeff Fisher said, "We drafted him based on his production as SEC Defensive Player of the Year." All right. I mean, 10 picks from the end? You know, I don't know. If you're so high in his production, that production typically would warrant, you would think, a higher draft spot. But regardless, I don't know where that story is going to go, but it's definitely one to keep an eye on in the upcoming days. We'll get to Todd McShay's two-round mock here in a moment, but let's get a couple calls in who've been waiting patiently, starting with Kenneth in St. Augustine, next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Kenneth.
Good morning. Pleasure talking to you guys.
What's up, buddy?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that nobody has brought up Woody Page.
He's been brought up on Twitter. We just haven't mentioned his name on the air, but, you know, the whole Jagwads thing, I think that was a case. I'll be honest with you. I don't know how uninformed Woody Page is now. I would imagine he's probably as uninformed as anybody else out there, but not any more so. Honestly, there's a tradition, and it doesn't make you feel any better as a fan of that particular team who's a target of this kind of thing, but there's been a tradition of editorialists writing disparaging columns about the opponent or the opponent's city, and it's done mostly tongue-in-cheek. Usually, Woody Page went way over the top back in 96 and had it blow up in his face when the Jags went into Denver and kicked the Broncos' asses right out of the playoffs. So You know, look, if you want to throw Woody Page's name in there, absolutely. I think he's a viable candidate, but I don't think typically any more so than any of the other mostly blowhard talking heads go as far as that goes. Thank you for the call, Kenneth. Let's go to Terrence on the north side. Hello, Terrence.
Mike D, how you doing, man?
Hey. I'm fantastic, Terrence. What's up?
Well, you're not going to like what I'm going to say. You're talking about national media, but I wanted to talk about the draft. But
Tell me what I'm not going to like. Tell me, why wouldn't I like what you're going to say?
The name I'm about to say.
Okay, go ahead.
Mark Brunell.
What? All right. Why do you think that would upset me for you to say Mark Brunell?
Oh, okay. Because you remember when he made that comment when he was on ESPN about the draft?
I do. That they would be moving to London shortly. Yes.
And I wouldn't mind if his name came down to the pride. So, for him saying that.
But, well, that's not that you'll be disappointed if you think that has a prayer of happening. So that will never happen, Terrence. But it doesn't bother me. You're not the first person, by the way, to mention Mark Brunell and his reference to the Jags moving to London, which he has since profusely apologized for. But it just questions, you know, why he would make that comment in the first place. You know, did
right.
he feel the need to be provocative in? I think it was his debut as a, you know, national talking head on ESPN. So, all right, going beyond that, what's your point about the draft?
Mike, at the end of the game, at the end of the day, the end of every game, it counts. Who has the most points is what counts, right?
Right. More points than the other team generally signifies which team won. Yes.
Okay. Now, the surest player, the one you know for sure that's going to be around for 10 to 15 years in this draft.
Who do I think it is?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if there is such a thing, but if I were going to guess and bet on one player being the surest thing, I would say that Laremy Tunsil is that thing.
Okay. I would go one step further than that.
Okay.
I would say Robert Aguayo.
Roberto Aguayo. Yeah. All right.
I mean, Roberto Aguayo. Roberto.
Okay. What are you suggesting? What are you suggesting here, Terrence?
Okay. Let's go against the trend. Why not get Roberto Aguayo with the fifth pick? And
Terrence.
Did he really just say that?
Terrence, you want to be taken semi-seriously, don't you?
Right, but listen. You're talking about somebody that's going to probably be around for 10 to 15 years.
How do you know that?
Work out?
How do you know that?
Well, Sebastian Janikowski worked out. Well, this is 16
well,
years.
Sebastian Janikowski also didn't go in the fifth pick, and Sebastian Janikowski has a much stronger leg than Roberto Aguayo.
Okay. Well,
Sebastian Janikowski might have the strongest leg of anybody consistently that's played in the National Football League for that period of time as a kicker, honestly.
Okay. So,
Sebastian Janikowski probably did. Let's say it this way, it wasn't the worst first round pick that the Raiders could have made because he's still with them. He's been in the league forever. It's been probably a solid pick for them. Terrence, you're not really suggesting this team is going to draft Roberto Aguayo with the fifth overall pick.
Mike, I'm just thinking outside the box here a little bit.
You are.
I know I'm way out of the box, but I'm coming down when we talk about winning the game at the end. They just moved – it's permanent that the line has been – the field goal line has been moved back. And we talk about making, 99% of our kicks, to win these games. I don't know. That's not a bad pick.
All right. Terrence, I will say this. If you look at Jason Myers last year, and I'm not trying to tell you it was great because you can't lead the league and miss extra points, but if you flipped it and you flipped the percentage of kicks he made or missed on extra points with the field goals that he made, he was actually very good kicking field goals. I'm not even trying to forget I even said that. They like Jason Myers. They stuck with him last year through all the ups and downs and many downs that came along. Due to either missed extra points or, in the case of the Indy game, two potential missed field goals or two potential game-winning field goals that were missed. That's their guy. They're sticking with this guy. Even if they didn't have Jason Myers on the roster, if they had zero kickers on the roster, they're not spending a fifth overall pick on a kicker.
Derek. Jason Myers,
you know that.
Jason Myers, 14th in the league in field goal percentage last year.
14th in the league, which is not great, but it's not the worst. He does have a cannon of a leg. Does he need to be better on extra points? There's no question about it. Will he be? There's no way of knowing. There really isn't. Would Roberto Aguayo come into the National Football League and be as accurate as he's been in college? You would expect, I guess, he will. There's no guarantee of that happening. And the difference in a handful of extra points here being more accurate when you're giving up the opportunity to get a playmaker with the fifth overall pick in the draft, I don't even believe Terrence believes the call he just made right now. I think Terrence, if he recorded this call and played it back, would not recognize himself as putting that idea forth.
If the Jaguars really drafted a kicker fifth overall, there may be riots at the Jaguars draft party. I would fear for the safety of the people there.
Honest to goodness, you want to be thought of as the laughing stock of the league. All right, you're just trying to get over that now that Brian Anger has moved on. By the way, what did he sign, a one-year deal with the Buccaneers, I believe I saw, for Brian Anger? Good for him. You know, Brian Anger didn't ask to be drafted in third round. If I'm Brian Anger, I'd be like, why didn't you take me in the second round? I mean, good for him. It's not his fault that he got taken ahead of other players that were much more important, but that just goes to show you. You know, no. I mean, even though Janikowski turned out to be probably a pretty good pick for the Raiders, because they got him probably, what, around the 20s? I'm guessing like 24th overall.
17th
like that.
Overall.
Was it 17th? Okay.
Yep.
Not even higher than I thought. And he's lasted this long. How many kickers last this long and pan out to be as good as they were in college? Not many of them, quite frankly. And a lot of the guys you have in the league, you're like, you never even heard of these guys before they got to the National Football League. Even Terrence knows that's ridiculous.
Miles Jack or Roberto Aguayo? I don't know.
You know what? I want to be a little more accurate on my extra points.
Think outside the box. Go with Roberto Aguayo.
No, Roberto Aguayo. The Jags are not spending any pick on a kicker. They whether you like him or not, they're committed to Jason Myers at this point in time. At least to the point where they're not going to. They may bring in a camp leg. They always do. You bring in guys like that, and if he stinks all off season, it's not like he's built up so much goodwill that he can't survive. That he can survive anything. But there's no reason to think that they've soured on him in the least bit. If they stuck through the whole season with him last year with that, they're certainly not going to spend a draft pick on a kicker. And if they were, look, seventh round, and there's a kicker you like, fine. Okay, whatever. Roberto Aguayo will probably be long gone by that point in time, but not long gone to the point where anyone would consider him as a top five pick in the NFL draft. Thank you, Terrence, for making me smile on the inside this morning here. All right, we'll come back. Fan Feedback Spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Automobile Dealerships asks you this. It asks you, which member of the national media do you think is the most clueless when it comes to your Jacksonville Jaguars? We'll go through some of the responses coming up next, live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I'm Dan Scuda of your Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, thank you there, Dan Scuda. Leo to be, perhaps, this year for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming up, final 10 minutes of the program today, live from EverBank. We'll be perhaps joined by Mr. Three-Timer, soon to be Mr. Four-Timer tomorrow, Tyler. I'm told Duval Doom.
Oh, special treat.
Well, he says, I'm just saying, I may not be working tomorrow. So he's got Good Friday off and would like to make it a great Friday by spending time here in the Jaguars Today studios, which is coincidental because David Garrard had to cancel at the last minute or the last 24-hour minutes.
That might be an upgrade.
Really? See, I value all these guys highly. I wasn't taking a shot at Dave. I'm just saying a microphone opened up on tomorrow's program, and none of the other, you know, longtime Jaguar Twitter people have really put themselves out there like Duval Doom has to make themselves eligible for co-hosting status on this program. So Doom may be joining us tomorrow. We'll see how that all plays out. Let's get Todd in Orange Park in here, and then I want to get to some of the reaction, both to the question of the day and, more importantly, the reaction to Terrence's call from 5 minutes ago about Roberto Aguayo. Todd in Orange Park, good morning. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I'm gonna do my best to try and follow up the insight that Terrence had shared.
It's gonna be tough, man.
Yeah, he set the bar high, but I am just gonna go out on a limb and I'm gonna say, clearly Woody he with the Jaguars comment, and he's such a tool, always has been and always will be, but yeah, he clearly just has no clue as it pertains, you know, to the Jaguars. But
and on top of that, he delights in, you know, he's just a guy who just wants to get a reaction out of you. And so the fact that, you know, and I'm not saying you're wrong to be bothered by what he had to say about Jacksonville and the city and on and on and on, but he's not upset with your being upset with him. You know what I mean? So those are the kind of guys I try to just tend to ignore, because honestly, Woody Page's opinion means nothing to anybody, does it? Other than in keeping his tally of how many times he's won around the horn, I guess. But Woody Page was a frequent submission today, so we appreciate that. Todd, thank you for weighing in on that. we'll get to some of the feedback here in just a moment. All right, let me see here. I want to see where these reaction shots started coming in terms of what Terrence had to say. Here we go. We started with Will saying, is Terrence scuba diving? Wasn't pleased with the quality of his connection. I was in that boat as well. Chris said, wow, that just happened. That guy is the Gene Smith of fans. Johnny Duval Doom, Johnny Machiavelli said in a Hicken voice, get him out of here. Let's see. Duval West, Jagging Flight said this caller needs to step away from the bong. These are your people, Terrence. They're talking about you. Spaz Gator said Terrence should be banned from the show until after the draft for that moronic opinion using a pick on a kicker. No, Terrence is way too entertaining to ban for any length of time. Let's see. On Facebook, got several more. No, actually, the text line got several more coming in. This guy can't be serious. Terrence is drinking Mad Dog 2020. Whatever Terrence is on apparently is what I need to be on. Seems like one hell of a trip. Terrence is dumb as beep. I think this guy is drunk. I just shot my drink out of my nose when Terrence suggested Aguayo should be drafted fifth overall. That was entertaining radio. Followed by this guy was an idiot. Followed guy that was probably the worst call ever on the station. So there you have it.
I think the best part about Terrence is that he truly believes what he calls into us. He truly has mapped out what he is thinking and what he's saying, and he believes it. It's not just
like Terrence.
It's not just to elicit a reaction. And I think Terrence truly believes the Jags should look at taking a kicker at five.
I think he's convinced himself, and I understand his logic. Hey, if you think this is the one guy who you know is not going to disappoint you, and that's the problem. You can't know that about any player. Go back to the Janikowski draft. We were just looking at it, Tyler, you and I on the break, and back in 2000. Well, you know, in the next round, the Jags got Brad Meester, who went on to play more games than any other player in franchise history. That would have been a much, you know, you would think certainly a worthwhile selection. Now, Janikowski has gone on to be an excellent kicker. So, again, if any kicker being taken in the first round, he seems to be justified a little bit there because of the length of time, the service to that one team. Then again, you could have maybe, I don't know, reached a few rounds early for that guy Tom Brady who went in round six that year, maybe, just a thought. Although I'll say this, bet the Jags wish they had drafted Janikowski instead of R.J. Soward that year. So you can screw it up. There's no question about it. I'd rather take a swing for a guy who's going to be an impact player on, I don't know, 50 or 60 snaps a game compared to a handful of snaps a game. They're critical snaps. Points are critical. There's no question about it. Hopefully Roberto Aguayo will be a good kicker for somebody in the National Football League. It's not going to be here in Jacksonville. All right, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day today. Which member of the national media is the most clueless when it comes to your Jaguars? Let me refresh here so I make sure I have the most up-to-date list here. Some of the ones that came in on Facebook. Joshua said, I honestly don't listen to anyone outside of 1010XL anymore. Oh, I like that. But I'll never forget Woody Page referring to our team as the Jaguars. He's gone on to write that he regrets that in his career since then, but it was pretty funny at the time. Hashtag Jaguars today. Damon went with more contemporary. He said Marshall Faulk, Kurt Warner, or Heath Evans, all from NFL Network. Those three always hating on the Jags in some form or fashion. They act like the Jags are the only team in the NFL ever to go through a down period. Every team in the NFL has been through a down period Hashtag haters, says Damon. Skyler said that's like asking which Ruth Chris steak is good. They all are. But if I had a guess, probably Kornheiser and or Bayless. Les went with Heath Evans as well. He says it gets on his nerves, although I agreed with him when he blasted Johnny Football. Chad said Kornheiser, if that's how you spell it. I believe you spelled it correctly, Chad. So brownie points for you. Chris said hashtag almost all of them. Jamie went with anyone on ESPN. We also had votes for Schefter this morning as I try to sort back through my Twitter here, Tyler. Schefter, Lockin' Four. I'm surprised Lockin' Four didn't get more run. Dan Patrick got a vote from Adam Rothstein. He said, Dan Patrick, no bigger friend to major markets, no bigger dum-dum when it comes to the small ones. Daniel said, Florio's a tool, but he knows Jaguar football because of his hate. I'd say Brunel. London Jags, question mark? I get it.
New Zealand Jags, according to Tony Kornheiser.
That's right. New Zealand, China, Brazil, you know, wherever. Wherever there's a stadium that's open and people will come watch, apparently that's where the Jaguars are headed next, according to the small-mindedness of Tony Kornheiser. Again, is really not so much info. He leans more towards the tainment part of infotainment. I think Kornheiser is pretty funny. I think it can be entertaining. And then he says something about the team you care about, and you get all angry about it. And that's fine if you want to feel that way. Kornheiser is who Kornheiser is. I'm more concerned with guys that work on the NFL Network that don't seem to have a clue. I'm more concerned, like a few years ago when we talked with Pat Kerwin, and I've references just short of a billion times now. Tony and I sat down with Pat Kerwin at the Super Bowl. This was a couple of weeks after Gene Smith had been fired and Dave Caldwell had come on board. Or maybe a week about, but it had happened. Pat Kerwin, a former GM and a guy who is, you know, an NFL insider, quote unquote, for NFL radio and the NFL Network. And he talked to us about how Gene Smith had going to have a long job ahead of him trying to rebuild the franchise or whatever he said. And we try to gently say, yeah, of course they of course just signed Dave Caldwell to come in, and we're trying to just refresh his memory. He goes, yeah, well, he's going to have to work hand in hand with Gene to try to solve all these problems. Had no clue that Gene Smith, one of the 32 general managers in the National Football League, had lost his job and been replaced, despite the fact that we tried to bail him out. And that's a guy who, you know, is in a position where he is put forth as an expert by the NFL's own media properties. And those are the kind of guys that bother me more, that just are blown smoke. And half the time you have to question, do they know what they're talking about when they talk about other situations out there? Because they clearly didn't in that instance when he was talking about Jacksonville. Those guys bother me more than the Kornheisers and the Woody Pages of the world, who all they're trying to do is get you to be angry with them and could care less and probably are delighted by the fact that they're being mentioned at all in Jacksonville, Florida today. So that'll do it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by, and maybe some Duval Doom in here tomorrow. You better bring breakfast. I know that, Tyler. Do you want him to stop by 1010XL World Headquarters and bring you anything? Is that as a condition maybe of coming in tomorrow?
I think it has to be a requirement, yeah.
All right, well, we'll discuss that off the air, and we'll see what we can get in terms of a breakfast layout for you tomorrow. Maybe some options. He usually does a good job with us, and Tony's not going to be here, so he only has to buy for me. So this should be an easy get for Duval Doom if he wants to come down tomorrow. All right, everybody, have a great afternoon. I'm going to stick around and say hello to the boys of XL Primetime coming up next. So for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for the absent Tony Smith, will be back with me on Monday. And for all of us here on Jaguars Today, I'm Mike Dempsey as XL Primetime comes up next here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.